From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There was a time when the world of stand-up comedy was dominated by white men whose jokes were couched in sexist and racist stereotypes. Today, as women and people of color fight to be heard and seen on screen and the stage, we're hearing a different type of cultural commentary. In her new album, Brownie Points, South Asian American comedian Raja Michael jokes about her immigrant Indian parents who settled in New Jersey, how her mother used to beat her, and how her teachers had a hard time pronouncing her name. Raja Michael is a stand-up comedian, artist, storyteller, and writer based in Los Angeles. And her collaborator on Brownie Points is Lenny Shelton. She now joins me. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, explain the name of your album. Lenny Shelton, your co-comedian on this, is also brown. So I'm assuming Brownie Points is something to do with the fact that you're both brown-skinned.
Yeah, this is definitely why we call it the Brownie Points. There's kind of like, there's a formula. So say if you're a South Asian or if you're a person of color and you're political or you have strong opinions, there's a formula to make you a little softer and more palatable, which is to have a partner who's white. But we're in a relationship and we're also creative partners, and that we were told often that that's not going to work because of the kind of opinions we have. My partner, he's Korean and black, and I'm South Asian, and they're like, yeah, you know, that kind of makes you a little, a little scary, even though we're not scary people.
Too diverse. You're too diverse. There's too many things going on for some people to handle.
Yeah. So we were like, you know what, we're going to do our own thing. So we wanted to have a little fun with it because we know we're breaking a formula. So we titled our album after that.
What are the challenges that face comedians who are non-white in today's world? I mean, we feel like because the screen has gotten a little bit more diverse, we're talking about the need for diversity in our cultural performers and cultural workers, that maybe it's an easier time today. Is it an easier time to break into this field?
I think it's definitely better than it was. So I would never want to talk that down. I think one of the things that make it so much better now is that we have things like Spotify and Pandora and different avenues to get our content out. So we can kind of like, we don't necessarily need to depend on the system as much as we used to. So definitely that makes it easier. And then there's a conversation. I think though, however, I will speak for myself because, you know, depending on your background, the challenges are different. But I will say, as a South Asian comic, there's still the challenge that even though there is more openness to having South Asian faces like doing comedy, the content is still very like controlled. As a South Asian comic, you're still very much expected to do the same old thing, the same accents, the same 7-Eleven jokes. Like, I'm a person with opinions and ideas, and I write jokes based on things I care about. And there's still a challenge in doing that, like being a human being and brown. It's, you know, not doing stereotypical content. And, you know, like if I was a white woman and I was telling the jokes I was telling, people would call me smart, you know, not scary or radical. So it definitely is still a huge challenge to break away from the image that white I see you with. If I'm like, I'm South Asian and I'm just being myself and the content is different than what people are expecting of a South Asian, that's still a very challenging place to be.
I want to play a clip from your album, Brownie Points, that is available, and we'll ask you to give our audience information about where they can get it. But first, here's a short excerpt, just a taste of Raja Michael's comedy from her album, Brownie Points.
I didn't enjoy my childhood. I got bullied a lot, you know, mostly by my teachers. I went to school, like when I was in school, I went to school in the 80s and 90s, and teachers got away with stuff they don't really get away with anymore back then. Like, a lot of my teachers, they didn't want to call me by my name. It was like too ethnic for them. You know, they wanted to call me Rachel or Rebecca. I'll tell you, my high school guidance counselor, she was the worst. Like, she was the worst. She'd be like, it's just too hard. I can't learn it. I can't learn your name. It's just too hard. I can't do it. It's too hard. Guys. My name is Raja. Raja. That That's two syllables. And those two syllables rhyme.
And that is Raja Michael on stage from her album Brownie Points, explaining how her guidance counselor had trouble pronouncing her two-syllable rhyming syllable name. Raja, I thought that this really resonated with me as somebody whose name is even more complicated than yours. And it really spoke to me about the importance of non-white people seeing themselves on stage. That representation is so important. And I'm wondering if you can comment on that.
It really is, because when you don't see anyone who's like you on stage, it's like you feel very disconnected, or almost like I think there was a point where I started, like, when I was really young, when I used to get really surprised sometimes when I realized I was brown, because I never saw brown faces on TV, you know what I mean? And you're taught to, like, see yourself as whatever you're seeing on images. Mm-hmm. And when I was really young, when I first saw Margaret Cho performing and talking about her mom, it was this weird thing that happened to me where I found, even though she's not South Asian, obviously, we're from different backgrounds, we're both Asian, and just hearing someone talk about being a first generation American, or, you know, her mom sounds different than her, or some of the challenges, you know, just hearing her talk about her mom was like, it blew my mind, because it was something relatable for me. You know, it was something I could laugh at and understand, instead of having to be an outsider learning someone else's world and then being able to laugh, you know? So it was this amazing thing. And it does make a difference. You know, we learn who we are by what we see on the media. It's hard to know who you are, to feel grounded as a person. So I think we're in a better time where we're beginning to be able to do that representation, but it's an uphill battle.
Right. Speaking of moms, I want to play another clip from your album Brownie Points, where you talk about your mother's reaction to your career choice.
She really hated that she hates that I do this. You know, she really hated it. She was really worried in the beginning because she thought it'd make me poor. She was right. And she would say things to me like, you know what's going to happen if you keep doing this? You're gonna end up working a pole at a strip club night after night just so you can pay rent. And I'd be like, Mom, don't be ridiculous. I'm not gonna work a pole at a strip club night after night. I don't have that kind of work ethic. It's like she doesn't know me at all, guys. But seriously, though, I can never be a stripper because, you know, strippers do things like work hard and stay in shape. You
know? And that's an excerpt from Brownie Points, the album by my guest Raja Michael, together with her partner Lenny Shelton. So Raja, in this clip that we just heard, your mother, of course, isn't happy about your career choice. And this is something, of course, that South Asians and maybe Asians in general contend with. We also have to, you know, alongside fighting the stereotype of the model minority from society, we sort of fight it even within our own community, right? Within our own families. And that, I am assuming, it provides rich fodder for you for punchlines on your show.
It does. I do like to joke about my mom. She's just a really good sport about it. She thinks it's funny, so it's like that gives me a lot more freedom to do it. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the way I see it for myself, because I think a lot of times, a lot of South Asians, young South Asians, don't pursue arts because they are afraid to hurt their parents. So, and that did stop me for a long time, because I was very rebellious growing up, and I was like, how far am I going to push my mom? You know what I mean? And it does provide a lot of fodder. But one way that I do see it is that it's, you know, naturally my mom has a different, like, set of trauma from her childhood and her upbringing than I do. And the reason why she didn't really want me to pursue arts is because she was worried about my well-being. You know, her main thing is my well-being, you know, and so I put in that context, and then it doesn't feel like something I can't do anymore. I realize, hey, as long as I can show my mom that I'm okay and that I am taken care of and I'm happier doing this, I will succeed, like, for what her goal was for me, everything she sacrificed for me, and she'll understand, which she has since I wrote that joke. But yeah, I think a lot of South Asian young people have a hard time. But you know, I think for me, I just did it, and then she got used to it, and now she's fine. So that's what we have to do. But I do joke about it a lot because it's. And you know what? I would say this about stand up. I don't know anyone from any culture who wants their kid to do this. So it's a really good thing for everybody. I don't know why I would do this, but so I think it's, even though it is specific to being South Asian, the jokes are right. I find that most people find it relatable, especially other comics. I've not met a single comic who's like, oh yeah, this was my family's dream.
So your parents are first generation immigrants, you're a second generation immigrant. We are living in a time when being brown, having a non-Anglo name, having an immigrant background is becoming a liability. And it's so sad to say this, of course. How much of the political culture frames your comedy? Some comedians are very comfortable tackling politics because political comedy is, you know, is quite popular, and others stay away from it. Where do you fall into that?
I definitely do political comedy. I think I never labeled myself. I understand why people stay away from it, because it does put you in a niche, meaning like you don't have as much mainstream appeal for television or things like that. But I lean into it. I'm comfortable with it and I go with it, because when I write, I write about the things that matter to me. And when I'm passionate or when I'm angry is when I do my best writing. So most of my best jokes that I've written that people really enjoy are stuff I wrote when I was just like hitting my boiling point, you know, frustrated with the world around me. So I definitely lean into it. And I think it's a gift because these are really, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to exist in society. And sometimes when you hear, just like when I heard Margaret Cho talking about her mom and I felt like I wasn't alone, I know that there's a lot of people who tell me like, when you said this, I felt less alone, you know, like I have a lot of material about white feminism and how it's race, you know, the racism in the white feminist movement. And I always have women of color. Maybe that won't make me the big next Amy Schumer, because maybe that's not mainstream appropriate. But I have so many women of color tell me all the time whenever I do that bit, or when they've heard, or who've heard it on my album or have seen it anywhere. They tell me like, that was so wonderful because those were the words I had in my heart and I couldn't say, and you said it for me. And I got to laugh while I, you know, it made me feel less alone and I got to laugh in the process. And that's like why I do this. And this is why it's my art, you know. So definitely I'm very comfortable doing politics. It's not going to make me everyone's favorite comic, but it does give me a lot of purpose in what I'm doing.
And of course, comedians are in that way often truth tellers in our society, because you sort of can get away with saying things that might offend people. But if you fold it into a joke, it becomes more palatable. And, you know, do you find that it can really help question some of the very dire things that are happening today in our country, that, you know, we sort of need political comedians. We've always needed, political humor as a means of cultural commentary, especially when things get really dark.
Yeah, definitely. In the 70s, that was very normal. You know, for comics, we're expected to be political. They're expected to push our understanding and our wisdom and our knowledge base, you know, and to challenge our ideas. And that went backwards when the stand-up industry became very corporate. And so it became less diverse. You know, that's because it didn't start like the kind of stand-up we do now, like the setup punchline format, that came out of the Black comedy scene. It didn't come out of the white comedy scene. And like all art in America, it came out of the Black art community and was appropriated by everybody. And then, so the fact that there was this whole era where it was dominated by white cis straight men just goes to show that was not a natural thing that happened. That was something that was a corporate. It was a corporate movement. So when comedy became, for a while, like in the 80s, 90s, became big money, it became very corporatized. So it was a style, a set of punchline writing style that was taken from the Black comedy community and then put in the hands of white men who then used it to oppress the exact community that they took it from, you know what I mean? Right. And writing very terrible, like bigoted material or exclusive material. And because that's always what happens when people want to make big money off of an art, it gets ruined, you know, in many ways. Of course, there were still great comics in that whole time that got through it, you know? But that whole peak of thinking like straight white male comics, straight cis white male comics, it really came from corporatizing comedy. But I think it's really exciting now because we have our own platforms. We have Spotify, we have YouTube, we have all these different ways to put out our own content that I see that it's coming back. You know, a lot of people are becoming accepting of truth telling in comedy again. And a lot, like you see, Hasan Minhaj has an amazing political comedy show on Netflix. And so that the door for us to be intelligent and to push boundaries and to say things that we're not allowed to say in other places are opening up again for comics. I definitely think if you can make someone laugh, they're going to hear things they're not willing to hear normally.
Right.
I have some jokes where I make fun of white feminists so much, and I have these white women lining up and standing up and applauding, and I'm just like, you're not offended. But I mean, if the material is truthful, and you know, people know it's not about them in general, like, it's not about you in particular if you're not doing this behavior. When I make jokes, I don't make that stereotypical, like, kind of white lens jokes. I don't do, like, the accents. I don't do the 7-Eleven jokes. If that's your truth, you can do it. It's not my truth. So I don't do that kind of stereotypical punching down humor on a South Asian community. But I do do my best to challenge problems in our community, such as anti-Blackness, as we know, like, South Asian community, we have a very, it is an anti-Black community, and it's not okay.
So absolutely. It's absolutely important to acknowledge that. Yeah.
It's not okay for us to be racist because we're not white. So I do try to write material. It's hard. It's a challenging subject to make funny without being, disrespectful to the community, you know, without being flippant. That's the word I'm looking for. But I do work my best to talk about things like that, things that we need to check face in our own community that's not okay and that we need to change. And at first, when I was doing that material in South Asian rooms, I didn't know how they would take it. I didn't know if people would take it as a personal attack, but it was my truth and I was still going to say it. But I've had the opposite experience. You know, I would do material like this talking about things we need to change in our own community. And I have been really well received by South Asian audiences for it. And people actually thanking me, like, oh, thanks for being honest about what's going on in our communities. So, yeah, if you can be funny and if you can comfort in truth and not self-hatred or hatred of someone else, people are very willing to listen.
What are the special challenges facing women comedians in particular? I mean, you mentioned Hasan Minhaj, and of course, men have tended to dominate the comedy scene for a long time. We do have women comedians that are making strides, not nearly enough women of color on stage in particular. Is it challenging for someone like yourself, a brown woman with an immigrant background, to break into the field?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so many challenges. One that all women in comedy deal with that's been on the news a lot, so I know I'm not bringing in new information, is sexual harassment. It's very real in that world. It's very real in clubs. I'm not going to name any names, but there are certain clubs and producers that, like, I just won't go to anymore, even though I should, because I just had so many bad experiences that I'm scared. Like, I'm like, why would I keep dealing with that trauma, like, you know, going into these environments? So that's a very real one. And then there's this idea that if you're a woman, you can't hang like the dude, so you have to prove yourself. And I'm not going to do that because I'm funny. You know what I mean? Like, I've proven myself when I was funny and wrote good jokes. And I'm not going to be like, hey, I could drink beer with the dudes. I don't need to do that. And I'm not going to do that unless I feel like it, you know? So there's definitely that. I think the way a lot of producers, it's improving, but it's still a thing where a lot of producers, they don't want to, like, book more than one of a thing. So if, like, a lot of times they don't want to book more than two Black comics on a lineup. They could be like 15 people on the lineup, but two Black comics would be too many Black people for them, because they're like, it's going to turn into a quote-unquote urban show, which is racist in itself, but that's the way they see it, you know. Or if, like, oh, we can't book too many women on this lineup because now it's going to be a chick show or a girl show, which makes no sense because you have 12 white straight cis male, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's two women is not a lot of women on that lineup, and why not? What's the big deal? If it's funny, I will tell you, audiences don't care. If every person on that lineup is funny, they're going to laugh and have a good time. But the industry and producers, they still see it that way. So so that we're put into a position where we're like, if we're not careful, we can adapt the mentality that we have to fight with each other and be competitive with each other to get that one spot. And it's a place I don't want to be in. And I'm really always fighting that, you know, resisting that urge to fall into that mentality. But it's really easy to fall into it because of that, you know.
And I'm wondering, you do perform in Southern California for a Los Angeles audience. Where can they catch your shows?
Where can they catch my show? So there's a monthly show that I co-produce It's called Politics Nights, all political comedy. It's a really diverse production team.
So you don't have five white guys in a row performing?
Never. And it's at the Sycamore Tavern. We'll have one Friday. What's Friday?
August 9th
at 7 p.m. at the Sycamore Tavern is our next show on the main floor. And so it's a really fun show. So really, if you like smart and funny comedy, it's a great show. I will also be at Asian AF on the 16th. That Asian AF, it's a South Asian AF. I'm sorry. It's run by another really big show called Asian AF at the UCB on Sunset. And that's a really fun show. It's going to be all South Asian comedy. And I have another show on Sunday called Facial Recognition, which is also a South Asian show. So yeah, I have a couple of shows coming up you could catch.
And then where can people, for those living outside Southern California who can't make it to any of your shows, where can they get a hold of your album Brownie Points?
So we're on all the major streaming platforms, so it's super easy to be able to listen or to download. Downloads are great, but I understand everyone has a budget, so at least stream it if you can't download it. So we're on CD Baby, cdbaby.com. We're on Spotify, iTunes. We're on YouTube. We're on Pandora. You could also, the album is available on Amazon, and you can leave, if you enjoy it, you can leave reviews on iTunes and Amazon. Those reviews make a big difference. It's super easy to listen to because it's pretty much everywhere.
And I imagine that as any other content creator understands, it's not easy to make money off of these things. Independent artists have an incredibly difficult time. You may have a plethora of platforms to put it out on, but actually making a living doing what you love to do and are good at doing is certainly not easy, right?
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
You all have day jobs?
Yes. you got to pay your bills, especially in LA. It's not easy.
Right. And so the CD downloads are more lucrative for performers than the streaming. So if people want to support you, that's a better way to do it. And certainly coming to the shows as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If there's a club in your area, it doesn't matter where you live. If you like our content and you want us, tell the club owner, tell the producers, comedy clubs you go to or venues you go to book us. And that really helps us a lot too.
Well, Raja, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I want to wish you the best of luck with the album and, keep challenging audiences. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Take care. And before we end our conversation, I want to play one final clip from the album Brownie Points featuring my guest, Raja Michael.
Me, like the genius that I am, I decided to fly to the South for the first time for a conference after 9/11. I'd never been to the South before. It was weird, like I was online at the airport and I was behind these two giant white guys, they had NRA stickers all over their luggage, neck tattoos with NRA guns, like huge guys, and they were scared of me, guys. They were scared of me. I was like, look guys, I am not a threat to you. I do know how to cook with seasoning. I know that's scary for your people. What do you think I'm gonna do? Throw turmeric at you at the airport security line?
And that is Raja Michael, stand-up comedian, artist, storyteller, and writer. That clip you just heard was from her first album with Lenny Shelton called Brownie Points. She's based in Los Angeles, and we'll post links to where you can find her album on our website. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.